texture like sun. Lays me down, with my mind she runs throughout the night. No need to fight, never a frown.
The Golden Brown. Wonderful to have Brownie back for another season. And Ash, I have to say that talking to football fans, my own anticipation levels, looking at the fixture, there are so many teams with realistic claims on a spot in the eight and positive about the season to come, that every week there are games that are, at least at this stage, we'll eventually sort matters out. Hopefully that will take a long time, but I've got to say that this season is brilliant in prospect.
Good evening, Mark. Good evening, listeners. Good to be back for another year. I'm as excited about this season as I have been for quite some time. I think it's a really even season. I think that we go in there, 16 teams have some sort of hope of making the finals.
Yeah,
probably two, that's only two that can't.
Carlton and Brisbane.
But the probably one of the teams that can't make it are really bullish and excited about the season. I've actually spent a bit of time with the Brisbane. Lions ahead of this for a feature for the round two record. I spent some time with Chris Fagan, David Noble, and they're really excited. There's a really good vibe around that footy club. So even though they probably won't play finals, they've got as much anticipation about what's ahead as the 16 teams that think they can make it. Carlton's a different story entirely. I think there's probably a bit of an acceptance at Carlton that they're in for a bit of a long season. But for the other 17 teams, it's going to be great. Like a lot of people trying to squeeze, you know, trying to work out my top four, top eight, it's been a difficult exercise. So it's going to be a good season. In the game, I know a lot of hype about Saturday night at the MCG, but that St Kilda-Melbourne game on Twilight Saturday, it's such an important game. I mean, the psyche for both teams can be set a bit at the start of the season. St Kilda win, and as they usually do against Melbourne, they can really set the season up beautifully. If Melbourne win, and they've got a pretty good draw to start the season, they could be 4-2 or 5-1, and that's the foundation by which you play finals. So that game's going to be fantastic.
I just think there are many such games. Collingwood versus the Bulldogs.
We've got Travis Cloke against his old team. And the big test for the Bulldogs.
Yeah, I mean, Collingwood will come out and throw everything at them. And if Collingwood would win that game, then Bulldogs have to realistically reset as part of the bunch.
They've got the Swans in round two. The Bulldogs. So you almost look at the context of round one in terms of what it means for round two, is who they've got in round two, because 0-2, you start to dig yourself a hole already.
St Kilda, Melbourne, you've mentioned. Essendon, Hawthorn. Well, this game is obviously emotional for Essendon as we see them back how they wish to be on the field. No Hodge for the Hawks, and an early real test for Hawthorn with, incredibly, last year's Wooden Spooners providing it, but that is under extraordinary circumstances. North Melbourne hosts West Coast. North Melbourne are expected to dip out of the eight, and West Coast are expected to return to better form this year. But that's an very important game for the Eagles.
It's a great game.
And a challenge. Well,
for Sunday, a challenge. I mean, West Coast, they're going with a third string ruck at the moment. And it might be Drew Petrie. And his first game for West Coast is against North at North home ground. So what an emotional time for him. We see Sam Mitchell running out for the first time for the Eagles. North would go into that game full of confidence, thinking they can spring the upset.
Adelaide GWS could really be the main game of the round by season's end. And GWS, if they can get to Adelaide and win, well, what will stop them?
It sets them up for it really nicely with, you know, and if you go through GWS draw and look at, you know, say they're going to win 17, 18 games, as the top team usually does, Adelaide away is a game that you think, well, that might be 50-50. So, but do Adelaide have the midfield to go with the Giants? And it's going to be the beauty of that game. And then Sunday evening, Freo Geelong.
A test for Geelong.
And this is an old-fashioned feud as well. I mean, a couple of protagonists being Steve Johnson and Hayden Ballantyne aren't playing, but they're not really, don't really like each other too much.
No, and Fremantle are looking to put last year's horror season behind them, and they need to beat Geelong at home to do that, whereas Geelong are looking to counter predictions of a dip based on such heavy reliance on Selwood and Dangerfield. Well, They've got a tough test first up, but if they can come home with the 4 points, we'll be looking at them very differently.
I don't know how much of this round one fine is due to what the computer spat out, or whether the AFL actually got a whiteboard out and said, this is what we want the round one matchups to be. But it's a fantastic round one. It's one of the best ones I can remember for a very long time. The AFL ground, crowd record, which is about high 380s or something like that, will be smashed. They'll get 400,000. I've done the maths for a piece for the AFL website and the record this week, and I'm estimating around 410,000 or 411,000 to go to the footy. That's based on looking at historical data between the teams as well. So this is going to be a cracking round one, as good as you'll get.
And the three teams that are expected to start the year with wins would be Richmond facing Carlton at the MCG for the season opener on Thursday night, Sydney hosting Port Adelaide, and Gold Coast hosting Brisbane. But the three outsiders in those games will all be desperate at nought and nought to start off on the right foot and give it their best, jolly best shot.
And there's always an upset in round one as well, so you figure it's going to come from one of those three games, because the other games are more or less, you know, close to 50-50. I'm originally nervous about, you know, the anticipation on Richmond. They're going to be better, but they'd want to beat Carlton in round one, so there'll be a bit of trepidation about them. I think Port will struggle to get over the Swans, and Gold Coast should beat the Lions, but the Lions are feeling pretty good about themselves.
Off the SMS, as a Richmond supporter, I'm really excited about the season and think we could surprise a lot of people. That being said, the thought of losing to Carlton petrifies me and has the potential to shatter our confidence and destroy our season before it begins. Do you think there's any chance Richmond won't give me a heart attack Thursday night and just get a solid, methodical win? Doesn't seem to be their modus operandi.
No, there'll be patches of this game. It was like this last year. Richmond were given no chance. Carlton were given no chance round one last year. And I think for large parts of the game, Carlton were the better team from memory. So they'll have their moments, the Blues. Bolton's a very good coach at making what he's got work for him. Richmond should win the game, but there will be moments of high anxiety for Richmond, because it's Richmond, and that's what they do. They don't go out there and put teams away by 80 to 100 points.
And of course, it's very exciting just to see. You can watch new recruits in JLT, but that JLT form really doesn't exist. It doesn't count, doesn't matter a jot or mean anything come the first bounce of the season. So for Tigers fans, it'll be what can Prestia, Caddy, Nankervis provide?
And I think they could pick up. So I actually, believe it or not, watched an intra-club game in the start of February for Richard on a Saturday morning and looked at Nankervis there and then and thought he's already an upgrade what they've had in the ruck for the last few years. Presti is a very good footballer, running off half back. Caddy, I'm not a massive Josh Caddy fan, but I think he'll improve their side.
Yep.
But I still think they'll lack a bit of X factor, Richmond. I don't think they're a chance to play finals. I don't think they will, but just a lot riding on that first game for them, because then they've got Collingwood round two, which they would see as winnable, so they could get off to a good start as well.
My concern for Richmond is that for most of the time at the helm, Damien Hardwick, I think, tried to create another Hawthorne and wanted a team that was able to move the ball by foot from player to player, possess the ball, clean possession, and it worked famously against Fremantle when Fremantle were undefeated after 9 rounds a couple of years ago. But unfortunately, what he's got now, having conceded, I believe, with a different game plan in JLT to be more direct, less time spent dwelling on the ball in the back half and taking the game on more, in other words, asking his players to get involved more in contested ball. What he's got is a lot of footballers that have really been conditioned to not being heavy, hard, contested footballers. And they are going to have to change their way of playing.
And what you say about the JLT series is right, Finey. It's not, I mean, different teams approach them differently every time, from not only game to game, quarter to quarter sometimes. Will the new game plan stand up under extreme pressure and they revert back to their old ways? It wouldn't be the first time it's happened. So it's all great on the whiteboard and you train for 6 months playing it, working on it, but come a bit of pressure early in the season, it can fall apart. So that's what we look forward to seeing in the opening weeks of the season.
Australia are now in credit. They lead by 4 runs, 4 for 156. Marsh, 43 not out. Winning fans more and more with each over he survives. And Peter Hanscom not out, 45. These two men are putting on a famous stand, not for the run scored, but for the time taken and the match potentially saved. The for me, a real a sort of litmus test for the new Richmond style and whether or not players can adjust having basically played their entire senior career differently would be a Nick Flosten, because he's a player that came to the club. He clearly has the ability to be a hard-edged in and under player, but has not, because of their game style, been much used in that. He's been more off the half back line and part of the link, part of the system that is now being rectified, I would call it, because it didn't work. Can Nick Flosten become a sort of inside tackling beast?
Yeah, well, questions.
With a click of fingers.
Yeah, well, questions have been asked. Damien Hardwick is asking questions of his players, saying you've got to have more strings to your bow. We need to rotate more players with the midfield. Nick Flosten, he's looked squarely in the eye and said, you're one of them.
Yep.
So, again, it's looked all right in the preseason. How's it going to stack up? You know, Carlton round one might not be the go, but round, you know,
they'll
like Collingwood in
enough.
Round two and West Coast round three, that's when they'll find out Flosten to midfield.
Well, let's take calls. 9429 1116 as the season looms. We're up to talk about footy in all its different guises. Mikey in Bendigo joins us. G'day, Mikey.
Yeah, g'day, Finey and Ash. I actually want to chat about the women's grand final and this farce. 2 points. Kevin Mitchell Jr. has to realise his job is to curate a ground for everything that's on there, not just for his favourite sport that is in the summer months of the ground. His head should roll over this. And look, I mean, you know, from, I know it's not about me, but from a personal point of view, I was going to fly up for this fantastic occasion. I thought, easy, you know, I normally stay right opposite the Gabba, go to the Gabba, get a bus put on by the club to the Gold Coast for the men's game and back. And, you know, now I'm not going to bother, because flying the Gold Coast, go to a ground that's in the middle of nowhere, have to be there for about 9 hours and then somewhere else for accommodation. It's just, this whole thing's just a farce.
It's played out terribly, hasn't it, Ash?
It's been, well, I will say the worst place to spend a night on the Gold Coast. I mean, there is a little bit to do. There's some nice things called beaches. But anyway, that's a matter of choice. It's a dreadful might be overstating, but it's a pretty poor situation for footy. And the caller is 100% right. Kevin Mitchell thinks he works at cricket. He thinks he's a cricket ground creator.
Yeah,
His job title should be that he works for the stadium, and whichever event the stadium puts on. Any curator worth his salt these days should, you would imagine, a good curator takes pride in presenting a brilliant cricket pitch for the summer and then a really great football ground in the winter, but he seems not to care. That's not the first time. There's all sorts of examples going back many years in which his indifference to
the centre wicket has been glossy hard, making it dangerous when the season has rolled around.
There might be two Brisbane ruckmen who would argue that their careers were cut short by Clark Keating and Jamie Chalmers. I think might argue that the start of the centre wicket cut short their careers. So it's a really disappointing situation. But the Lions, it's not just for the wicket. And I've talked to people who work at the Gabba, and they really do at times feel like second-class citizens.
Yep.
Without cricket, without footy, that stadium would be filled maybe 8 times a year.
Yeah. A situation that, well summed up by Mikey, requires not the AFL, it's not their responsibility, but the Gabba Trust to stand in and say, look, mate, You've been asked to help us turn a profit here. You work counter to our needs. You know, he's citing the tests next summer as a reason for his slow and careful handling of the ground.
He could
ground.
Plan with reasonable certainty that the Brisbane Lions won't need the ground past the last week of August.
Yeah.
So it gives you 3 months to get the wicket ready for the first test. We all want to see a great wicket for the first. This Ashes series is going to be fantastic, and every football fan wants the centre wicket to be pristine and in good nick for the first Ashes test, but really not at the expense of a game of footy.
Not how long out we have. Thanks for the call, Mikey. 4 for 158. Australia lead by 6 runs and continue to frustrate the Indians. Craig's in Werribee. We were talking about Nick Flosten, and he joins the discussion. Good evening, Craig.
Good evening, boys. How are we going?
Yeah, we're well.
That's good. Just further to the discussion before about Flosten, it seems when Hardwick comes to the club, he recruited a lot of like players like he played his career with the back pocket players. And now it's sort of said to Boston, oh, well, it's your turn to shine this year, but we're going to go and hide Brandon Ellis back into the back line. What do you think of Brandon Ellis going back?
He's got to find some form, Brandon Ellis. He's probably been the most disappointing player at Richmond. A bit symptomatic of the team as a whole, just as largely underachieved. I think it was 2013 or 14 he had a great season. But
I mean, him and Lennon have beaten
it. Yeah, the whipping boys almost. Yep. And then Vickery was another one. Well, Vickery's out the door. And Brandon Ellis, it's a crunch season for him. Maybe they've got to give him more responsibility and just sort of say, it's with you to make him play his best footy.
And Steve Morris is not far from returning. And despite his detractors, by the time...
Of which there are many.
Well, by the time he got injured last year, he was actually playing very well. He was no longer the defensive forward. He was providing a lot of inside possession work through the midfield and in the back half. So Steve Morris will be considered again in due course.
You just felt he was salvaging his career, didn't you, when he went down? It was a really untimely injury.
He was playing very well at that point in time, comparative to the trials and tribulations of the forward line. I tell you, one player that needs to re-emerge for Richmond is somebody who until last year had been on an upward curve most unusual, and that is that at under 6 foot, he was a marking forward, kicks the ball a long way, fast, jack of all trades, master of many, had injury problems last year and never got the car out of the garage, was Edwards.
Yeah, he's been a good player in good teams, hasn't he, for Richmond?
Oh, Shane Edwards is a good player.
Yeah, he's a very good player.
Never, as I said, just never got the key in the ignition last year.
Didn't work for him last year.
His best self returning in 2017 makes a big difference to that team.
Yeah, well, it makes their forward line a bit livelier and certainly less predictable. They were a very one-dimensional forward line last year, having a guy like Edwards active and busy and playing at the feet of the forward and jagging a couple of goals himself just makes it better.
With Rioli.
Yeah, and you jack him in Rioli, and it's starting to be a forward line that will ask questions of back lines, which it just hasn't been often enough.
No, because really what they were doing last year was taking midfielders and throwing them in the forward line, the likes of Lambert and Lloyd and various versions of footballers. And was it Lambert who won them the game against Carlton last year in the round one? Or Lloyd? One of them.
Lloyd won the Swans game.
Yeah, he kicked that.
The kick.
I mean, Lambert, who played really well in that first round last year, but they're not small forwards. They're just players.
And they plug down there.
Who are thrown in for want of a better option. No, they've got more at their behest this season, no question about it. A break. When we come back, plenty of callers. I'm going to ask Brownie the questions I asked of the listeners in the first hour and also give you my scandal of the year prediction. Australia 4 for 165, 75.5 overs gone. Will India take the new ball? It's due in 4 overs. They probably have to because they are not budging. Hanscom, who's on 52 off 129 deliveries, or Marsh, who's on 46 off 154 deliveries. It seems as though the new ball will be their last resort. Ashley Brown is in the studio from AFL Football Record and AFL Media. We've got callers waiting, Brownie. Let's get straight back to them. And Bruno's on the road. Good evening, Bruno.
Yeah, hi, Finey. Hi, Ash.
Bruno.
Yeah, fellas, I've been listening to the radio today and they're talking to Ox in particular, I think. Gary Lyon in particular was talking about Richmond, Carlton being round one. And he didn't think it was very fitting. And the answer that generally was given was it was tradition. But I can't help but think the AFL, they throw away one tradition and they bring in their own tradition. And I'd like to see them reward the teams that finish third, fourth, fifth and sixth. And I'm sure I speak for most AFL fans, I would love to see my team on Anzac Day or Good Friday or around first game of the year.
They've tried a few things. They tried for a while playing the grand final rematch in the first game of the year, and they thought the anticipation of that game was lost amongst all the season hype. Anzac Day, I've got no real objection to Essendon Collingwood Anzac Day. I mean, I think, and this is a separate discussion, I think, Finey, but part of the whole reawakening as a nation about Anzac Day is partly as a result of the work Essendon and Collingwood did to build that as a great footy day.
Oh, it's their day.
It's their day. So I'm happy for Essendon and Collingwood to have it. Good Friday is an interesting call. North and the Bulldogs, must be remembered, have only got that game for 1 year. They've actually got to guarantee, they've got to get a good crowd in. If the crowd doesn't turn up, the AFL's made it quite clear that other teams might get it next season.
Yep.
So, but North have been, they've put the hard yards in for so long to get this as a landmark game of their own. Good luck to them, they should get the first go of it. And they've been a finalist the last sort of few years, so that almost, you know, it's almost rewarding a team that's played finals footy.
Carlton Richmond, now our traditional season opener on the Thursday night, I describe as a soft opening. It's not exactly
like a preview before the official.
It's a restaurant. Premiere. It's a restaurant that's opening in a few weeks, or it's a play that's they've. You get told you can go and watch this Broadway play, but it's not the official opening. And if there's need for the director to stand up and stop proceedings, he will. And this is not and has not been mouthwatering in prospect. I think the first one might have been. They might have both been going okay. But
the Ben Cousins game was the one that got the... that was the biggest one, and Cousins got injured. So,
but they draw a big crowd.
And for a club like Carlton, which, you know, you and I... This is unfathomable to you and I going up finally, but they're very much almost a second division club now, Carlton. So any big gate they can get, they should grab. And this is pretty much it for them now. If I want to say play Collingwood at a time of year when it's meaningful. So... I've got no real problems with it. It's a 4 day first round. We talked before about some of the other big games that are happening. Let Carlton Richmond have their opening of the season. It doesn't dull the anticipation of the rest of the round.
Right. That's right.
With a Carlton Richmond, and I always go. It's I always want to go the first game of the year. I'll be there because it's real life footy. Probably one of the few times I'll probably see Carlton for the year to have a look at it. But I'm not no illusions. It's not the best game in the round. It's just the first game.
And for me, it sort of winds up day by day. Carlton Richmond is superseded by Collingwood Bulldogs, which is superseded by St Kilda, Melbourne and Essendon Hawthorn, which is superseded by, for me, the best clash of the round, Adelaide GWS. So I think he just gets better and better in prospect. That's okay. Nothing wrong with that.
There's enough big games to go around. There's enough landmark.
Every week there is now.
Yeah, there's enough to go around. So give Carlton Richmond round one. I don't have a major problem with it.
Let's head to Maribyrnong. Good evening, Ange.
G'day, Barney. G'day, Ash. Quote me if I'm wrong, Finey, but I'm sure that Gillen said that he was going to try to make it more affordable for families.
Yes.
Now, I heard now that food and beverage prices are going up. Now, prices of food is going down. Prices of beverages are going down. What in the hell is the AFL doing? They don't want the family guy to go to the footy anymore? Are they trying to price out the family?
But it's not really the AFL, is it, Ash? The AFL can have input, but...
Yeah, the AFL had input certainly a couple of years ago when both in Victoria, both the MCG and Etihad Stadium came to the party. And without wanting to sound like too much of a company shill, we're not talking massively extravagant food prices. It's, you know... And I know it all adds up, and I appreciate taking, as I did for many years, taking young families to the football, and it can be a sizable impost. But we're not talking massive price ranges, and there's still things like Sunday free footy, which is not a bad deal, you know, for kids under 15. So, and more kick to kick this year. So I think they're trying to...
And you're allowed to bring your own food.
And you don't get to stop bringing your own food to the footy anymore. So I accept the fact food will be more expensive this year. I don't think it's a huge... massive impost compared to previous years, and I think the AFL done a reasonably pretty good job of improving the fan experience the other way. So, yeah, it's never great when prices go up.
I mean, I'm almost willing to say that in certainly my mind's eye, the football is not a place to feed the family. You're not going to the footy for a...
Rule number one. You eat before you go.
I'm saying that's the sort of thing, you know. Now, if people have to change their mindset from back in the day when you could just pick up a pie and, you know, it was a good, cheap place to feed the family, it's not... You don't go to the movies to load up on the lollies and the popcorn because of their value at the concession stand. And I think football and all... Not football. All real... any event held at a venue... should be viewed sceptically by people that need to pay for anything more than the ticket. Everything else is going to be a gouge. I think that's how you have to view it. if you get a result somewhere, more power to you.
Yeah. Since near dot, don't go to the football hungry.
Yeah, it's not. You go and watch the footy. Don't go there for dinner. I mean, plenty of people do, because it was traditional to do so. But if you've got a big family, you're going to have to pay from the hip pocket, as you do it anywhere else you go out. And the primary objective isn't eating. You eat while you're watching something. Yeah, I learnt that with my first $7 box of Minties. Andrew, and that wasn't at the football. Andrew's in Geelong. Good evening, Andrew.
Hey, how you going?
I'm well.
Went to the Gabba a couple of years ago over the summer and did a tour. We went for about 2 hours. And the bloke mentioned football once.
by mistake?
How much damage it did for the turf.
Well, there you go.
It sums up the Gabba experience. Exactly. You know the Brisbane Lions, if they sign a footballer in the trade period and they want to get him, get the photo in the polo and holding up a Sharon, there's a reason why they take the photo in the grandstand. Because they ain't
allowed on the ground.
Not allowed to stand within six. They can't even stand 5 millimetres from the fence in a pair of runners.
They get
chased off the ground.
Incredible.
It is unbelievable. Their staff members, as I understand it, cannot, during a test match, can't actually stick their head out of their office and stand up the back and watch a couple of overs of the test match on a lunch break. I mean, they are just second-class citizens in every way, shape, or form. And this just about sums it. And this call sums it up perfectly.
Well, very sad situation. When you consider, as Ash pointed out earlier, that save for football, there's not a heck of a lot of big crowd-pulling events that happen at the Gabba. That's why their seats are those colours that make you think there are people in them. They're an optical illusion. So I have my, off the SMS, just a response, utter crap, mate. What if your team's not playing on Sunday? The AFL don't care about people that go to the football. Well, that's not true. It's easy to throw barbs and more at sort of Yegg Central down there at AFL House. And yes, I'm the first person to stand up. Well, not the first, but I'm in the first battalion of people that would stand up and point out when the AFL are conducting business, not running a football competition. But prices remain very reasonable when compared to going to other sporting events.
And the AFL will throw at you, when was the last time the prices went up for the finals? There's been a freeze on final tickets prices for a little while as well. And a lot of the changes, a lot of the price increases in prices at home and away games now are controlled by the clubs.
Yep.
It's the clubs are putting the variable pricing. The AFL stopped doing it. Handed control of the pricing and seating to the clubs. The clubs are the ones who often make it an expensive day to go to football on a day other than Sunday. So I don't think it's fair to sheet the blame entirely to the AFL.
I had a very traumatic experience during the week. I had to go into the Tigers' den, Richmond Football Club, deep within its bowels to its
Tiger Den.
Yeah, what are the shops called? The merchandising store.
Yeah, the Tiger Den or something.
I got a headache from all that yellow and black. I really did. My head started spinning because my youngest daughter, Harper,
yes,
ready for her first full, proper membership. You know, I got her a membership that gets her into all Melbourne games, 17 or 18 games, $55. It's still pretty reasonable.
It's very reasonable for kids.
Yep.
If your team plays the MCG and you're not bothered with the reserve seat, the membership can be reasonable value as long as you use it. I mean, it goes up after that. But, I mean, some interesting deals going around. Geelong have got a membership, $99 for all games in Melbourne. And without looking through the fixture, I imagine that's probably seven or eight, nine games.
Yeah, it's good value.
That's not bad.
Good value. And so has been Hanscom and Marsh, still batting resolutely. This game heads to a draw. We are now one ball remaining for the first ball, and they can take the new ball straight after. We'll see what happens during the outbreak. Brody's in the house. The Indians have taken the new ball, but they've kept the spinners on. So whilst they are happy to bowl with the harder ball, it's still going to be Jadeja and Ashwin for the time being and going to be using it, I believe. I'm pretty sure they've taken that new ball. They were throwing it around 5 minutes ago. So I imagine they're now bowling with it. Australia 4 for 172. This game looking more and more like the unlikely draw that we were thinking was just a dream when Steve Smith went out in the first session. Ash Brown is in the studio. Brownie, I've got some questions to ask you, and they are, who, we asked these of the listeners in the first hour, and it went very well. Who is your bolter for the All-Australian team at the end of the year?
Dane Beams.
Ooh, good call.
Brisbane Lions, I think he's fit, he's content. I think leadership will sit beautifully with him.
Yep.
It's a bit of a mutual love affair going on between him and the coach up there, and who's going to get the best out of him. So I think Beams, not a bad midfield, and the chance for him to shine in that midfield.
Who is your shock omission for the season?
Oh, well, I have to give
cool one.
It's a hard one. Can I put that one on notice?
Yeah, some people don't like doing that one, but I did.
Well, it's a good idea. It's a good question, and you did warn me, but I haven't really thought. But I don't know. I know who you're going to say, but I won't say it. So
no, I've done mine already. Sam Jacobs.
It probably is a ruckman.
Yeah,
probably is a ruckman because they'll think someone better.
I've got nothing
along
against Sam Jacobs, but Riley O'Brien was quite impressive at the end of last year.
Yes.
So I'll just wait for his emergence. And finally, of the young guns, who's going to be the leading goal kicker? Most have gone for Tom Lynch.
I'll agree with that. Actually, I think nominated on the website as my common medalist. I think he's ready to explode this year. He's a very good footballer. And of the under 26, he'll be the guy. I mean, Josh Kennedy will kick a lot of goals, but he doesn't fit in. So
will Badoir.
And the Badoir, yeah. Badoir will have should have a very good season as well.
Now, I've got my scandal of the year prediction. My scandal of the year is this, that within a couple of weeks, we will receive official confirmation from Gillon McLachlan that this year's grand final will be a twilight grand final. But to quieten down the baying naysayers, he will also announce that the pre-game entertainment is the hugely popular Adele. Thank you, Adele. The scandal will come when Adele's pre-match entertainment stage is removed and the MCG is deemed unfit for play, and the game will have to be quickly moved to TIAC Oval in Port Melbourne.
I think if you were going to have a wager on the pre-match entertainment, or more to the point now, maybe the half-time entertainment of a Twilight Grand Final, I think Midnight Oil would be your educated guess. I think they start their national tour. The Australian leg of their world tour starts, I think, 1 or 2 days after the Grand Final. So I'd be backing that well-known Essendon supporter, Peter Garrett, to be a major act at the AFL Grand Final this year, which likely be Twilight, hopefully, for selfish reasons, like them to delay it one more year before it goes to Twilight, but I think it's inevitable. It'll actually be great. I think it'll be a wonderful spectacle when it moves to Twilight. Having been at that preliminary final, a few of those close preliminary finals in recent years at Twilight, so it adds to the atmosphere.
You know, once a game starts, can I tell you that I look back at great finals, and yeah, if I really concentrate on them, I know whether they were night games or day games, but that just isn't in the discussion or the reckoning. I've never gone back and said, oh, that was a great game because it was at night or...
No, but adds to the spectacle of it all.
I'm not detracting from it. I just don't think it matters what time the game starts.
No, it doesn't matter. But I think it makes it more of an event. I certainly think...
Things look better
Northern
at night.
Things look better at night. And I certainly think Northern Australia would... it's more likely to get... your casual fan will, in New South Wales and Queensland, is more likely to sit down towards the end of the day. Then they're not going to stop their daytime activity, whatever it is, for the AFL Grand Final, but they're more likely to sit down and watch the game if it's on when they're home late afternoon, whatever. But which is going to add more revenue to the game. You know, I love the red Sharon bouncing down 2:30. And, you know, if we have 12 Grand Finals, no more red Sharons for the Grand Final.
Yellow ball.
Does it have to be?
That's
the rule. That's the AFL rules. If a game starts after...
Oh, that's bad.
3 o'clock, it is considered a twilight or night game, and the yellow ball takes over.
Oh, I don't like that. Once again, we've had a review of an LBW appeal called not out, and once again, the review says umpire's call. So, on both of these reviews this session, the ball was deemed to be hitting the wicket, but not enough of the ball, in a very strange piece of animation that is the
Does that mean you get two fresh reviews once you take a new ball? I thought I looked up before and said I didn't have any left. So.
Yeah, India's now down to one. And I think it's unfair. If you do review and it says that it's hitting the stumps but not... You shouldn't lose
You shouldn't lose your review. No, I agree with that.
If it's umpire's call, you should still keep your... You weren't wrong.
Mm.
Just you weren't right. Oh, well. I'm sure the Indians are loving the DRS as we stand. Virat Kohli is about to explode. Strange chap. So, as we head into the first round of football, we've got AFL Women's Grand Final. What's your total? We've still got the Grand Final to come with a bit of a fiasco, but what's your mark out of 10 for the AFLW?
Oh, I'd give it a solid 9. They haven't done a lot wrong. It's been a fantastic competition, and I don't know if I've said this to you before, but working as we do at the AFL, it's just been a real boon for the organisation. It's put an extra spark in everyone's step to have this competition that's been groundbreaking, and everyone's been blown away with the interest. You know, I'm not a big fan of growing it next season. I think give it another year to consolidate. Their second year blue, iron out some kinks. But it's just been a fantastic competition in so many ways. We forget it's Australia's number one. It's the closest thing we have to Australia's national sport now.
Yeah.
Women want to play it. It's just a really good thing. And all the problems that flow on from it, such as facilities, such as the highlight on Channel 9 last night, it's a problem, but a good problem to have. I think it's been great. What do you think?
Yeah, I've been more than happy watching a game of women's football. As I said, when it comes to watching women's football, it's not to be compared to the men's game. It's not to be compared to the suburban game. It's to be compared to with what's on TV at the time. And as I flicked around, I found myself watching a bit of women's football because there hasn't been a lot of live sport on. The timing's good. Now, the games are fine. I can certainly see a real upturn in quality of football over the next few years. I've heard that...
Because the pathway programs will kick
correct.
In.
Correct. I've heard that the under-18 and under-16 competitions... I heard somebody who I respect in football tell me that if they picked the best team out of the under-18 girls, that team could have won this competition. They were not eligible to be picked. They're too young. But these are girls that have been prepared and played football their entire sporting life. They've been playing it now at a pretty high standard through national competitions, and these girls in a couple of years are going to absolutely take up the position of probably the 5 to 7 girls per team for whom football's not naturally their sport.
And that was the thinking why the competition was going to start in 2020, because that's when they thought they would have a really good supply of
correct.
Good quality players.
Correct.
They sniffed the wind and thought, no, let's go now and launch it, and that's been worthwhile.
It's
but
been
there'll
worthwhile.
Be some players who've you've got by on a bit of grit and determination, but they just won't be good enough.
No. But all these girls now through the under-18s, they'll hold the ball properly, they kick it properly. We're going to see a form of football that is not the same as the men's. Sometimes it's going to be more engaging. I'm telling you, the contest of the ball is ferocious.
The game has improved over 7 weeks. I mean, I watched that Collingwood Adelaide game yesterday.
Yeah.
That last quarter was a beauty.
Yeah, there have been some great quarters.
Some of the goals, Tex Perkins and Aaron Phillips, I mean, it's just been fantastic. So it's improved over 7 weeks. The timing's perfect because I think we really do get to the first week of February and everybody's had their fill of the summer sports.
Yep.
Everyone's talking footy by then, so might as well start playing some footy.
Yeah, no, it was been a success. Pretty that it ends with a problem rather than a celebration, but we can blame the Gabba and the curator for their indifference to football and their short-sightedness, because I don't know how much women's sport they have at the Gabba, but here was an opportunity to really do something groundbreaking for them. Instead of groundbreaking, they did ground watching and didn't fix it.
Yeah, I think that was Gil McLaughlin's point. It's more than actually a footy game. This is sort of a landmark event for women's sport in Australia, and the Gabba could have been front and centre at a piece of history, and it's a
correct.
Major oversight by the team there not to allow that to happen.
Absolute dingbats.
History will judge them poorly. As already are, really poorly.
A break, and when we come back, we'll say goodbye to Brownie as Australia put this game in the safe zone. 4 for 175, 22 runs the lead. Marsh closing in on a pretty famous half century for that man. 48 not out. Hanscom, a handsome 58.